Radio Prague News. The outgoing government has proposed to seize the property of the multi-million crown Setuza food and chemicals conglomerate. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has informed President Václav Klaus on the latest developments in government negotiations. And a group of Roma rent defaulters have filed a criminal complaint against town councillors in the eastern Moravian town of Szczecin. The outgoing minority Civic Democrat government has proposed to seize the property of the multi-million crown Setuza food and chemicals conglomerate. Media reports say the government suspects that the recent sale of Setuza, with which the company rid itself of an almost 4 billion crown debt to the state, in reality never took place. The government fears that Setuza is still controlled by its former owners, who are linked to a number of controversial businessmen, including Tomáš Pitr, who was found guilty of large-scale tax fraud. A court is expected to rule on the government proposal later on Wednesday. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek visited President Václav Klaus on Wednesday to inform him on the latest developments in ongoing government negotiations. In a briefing after the meeting, the two politicians said talks on forming a new government are making headway, but did not say what kind of a new government they had in mind. Mr. Topolánek, who is the leader of the centre-right Civic Democrats, reiterated that more concrete information would be revealed after his party's national conference this weekend. And confirmed reports say that the leaders of the two strongest parties on the Czech political scene have already come to agreement over who will fill ministerial posts in a possible coalition government. The Social Democrats no longer object to Civic Democrat Interior Minister Ivan Langer keeping his post, while the Civic Democrats are reportedly willing to give up the post of Foreign Minister to former Social Democrat Lower House Speaker Lubomír Zaorálek. A group of Roma rent defaulters have filed a criminal complaint against town councillors in the eastern Moravian town of Szczecin. The Romanis were recently evicted from their homes in Szczecin and rehoused in a complex of porter cabins some 70 kilometers away. The case gained public attention when Szczecin Mayor Jiří Čunek described the eviction as the cleaning of an ulcer in the town center. Mr. Čunek, who has in the meantime been elected senator, could face up to 5 charges, among them abuse of power, blackmail and fraud. And a quick look at the weather. The Clementinum weather station in the center of Prague measured 16.1 degrees Celsius at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, exceeding the record 16 degrees measured 80 years ago. Other towns that posted similar record temperatures were České Budějovice and Klatovy. The next few days are expected to be equally warm, with day temperatures reaching 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Dita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, and my name is Ian Willoughby. Today, the Czech Republic's two biggest parties are inching towards forming a government. But has this been inevitable ever since the elections in June? The Czech Republic now has over 400 centenarians. A major exhibition entitled Decadence opens in Prague. But just what is decadent art? And later, the Nazis destroyed part of Prague's famous Old Town Hall. What should be built on the site today? Stay tuned. It appears, and I stress appears, that the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats are close to agreeing a deal that would see them divide up power in a new government. The former are no longer insisting on early elections. The latter say they would now tolerate the presence of smaller parties in the cabinet. But had the two big players really all along expected to end up governing together? And were the last 5 months of negotiations and breakdowns all for show? That's a question that Daniela Lazareva put to political analyst Petr Just.
I think that this was kind of a strategy of both political parties to set pretty high conditions at the beginning of after-election talks. Therefore, now they can show how much they are stepping back from their initial conditions that they set at the beginning, and they can show, see how big progress we have made, see how we want to cooperate with you. We did so many step back, so definitely it's kind of strategy game towards public and voters.
A part of the center-right civic democrats remain in favor of early elections. Will party leader Amir Topolánek be able to defend this major concession?
I think he will. We have to see the early elections. I mean, the idea of early elections was here as something to solve the deadlock. It was in the time where parties were not even communicating each other, when there was a minority government and nobody expected that this minority government would receive a confidence. So the early elections, the idea of early elections was here in some kind of wider context. And now the context has changed. So the idea of early elections is also changing this way.
Now, Mirek Topolánek said that if he agreed to a government with a mandate lasting up to 2009, it would necessarily have to be a pro-reform government because the country needs reforms. Are the parties who would be involved in this government able to form a pro-reform government and agree on reforms?
In this issue, I'm quite pessimist. I know that Mr. Topolánek has promised a lot of reforms, financial reforms, social issues reforms, healthcare reforms. However, it was in opposition to what the Social Democrats, as the major opponent of the right-wing civic democrats, what they had said. So in this issue, I would be quite skeptical, but I know that Mr. Topolánek needs to keep his face and at least promise that he will try to initiate these reforms. Actually, initiations of the reforms is the only step that this ideologically very wide and heterogeneous government could do.
How long do you see this government as being able to last?
This will depend on the discipline of parties that will be present in the government. First, the government has not been formed yet, so we should probably wait with some conclusions, because we have witnessed already during the summer that there were several moments where we could say, okay, the agreement is almost reached. However, after a few days, there was no agreement and there was no government.
And the political analyst Petr Yust was talking there to my colleague Daniela Lazareva. There were dramatic scenes on Tuesday as the police made a number of high-profile arrests. A heavily armed unit swooped on football club owner Jaroslav Starka on a motorway in central Bohemia. Meanwhile, on Prague's Voričkova Street, traffic was delayed as masked and armed officers picked up an associate of Mr. Starka's. They and five others are suspected of the kidnap and subsequent death of the father of one of the country's most notorious fugitives. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Marilla Příbram football boss Jaroslav Starka and other business partners arrested in the Czech Republic on Tuesday have long been suspected of connections to organized crime. According to reports in recent months, the team owner suspected he might come under arrest, and now it is reality. Police suspect that Mr. Starka and associates were behind the disappearance and death of Lambert Krejčíř. He was the father of controversial millionaire and suspected crime figure Radovan Krejčíř, and was kidnapped in 2002 in order to apparently blackmail the son to pay up on past debts from business activities. Some believe the elder Krejčíř suffered a fatal heart attack during the abduction. Krejčíř's son Radovan, in a much-publicized case, escaped the Czech Republic later to avoid arrest for his own alleged crime involvement, and now he resides in the Seychelles. He replied no comment to the developments on Tuesday. In the past, he expressed hope that the perpetrators in his father's murder would be found, and from the start, Mirela Příbram's boss, Jaroslav Starka, was reportedly suspect. Not surprisingly, the boss of the first division team denied any involvement, even stating that he and Radovan Krejčíř were on good terms. Still, Mr. Starka is no stranger to controversy. His name has been mentioned alongside Tomáš Pitr's and František Mrázek's. Mr. Pitr is now in prison, while Mr. Mrázek was murdered in a professional hit in January. In the past, Mr. Starka was also questioned in the kidnap case of an Italian banker, and then last year he escaped with his life after being shot twice by a would-be assassin. Regarding football, he is considered to be one of the most influential figures in the Czech League, voted to the league's executive body last year. If Mr. Starka is remanded in custody for a longer period, he and the others have been charged with robbery as well as kidnapping, it is likely that will have a negative impact on his team's fortunes.
The oldest citizen of the Czech Republic, Maria Kraslova from South Bohemia, celebrated her 108th birthday on Monday, surrounded by family members and still in good health. This year alone, almost 200 Czechs have reached or are about to reach the age of 100. And the number of centenarians is expected to rise as the trend of population aging continues, Pavla Horáková reports.
According to records of the Czech Social Security Administration, the oldest Czech man is 106 years old. They report that the Czech Republic, with a population of 10 million, has several hundred centenarians. Spokeswoman Štěpánka Filipová.
At the beginning of November, the Czech Social Security Administration registered 404 people who are 100 or more years old, that is, people born between 1898 and 1906. According to our statistic, 338 of them were women and 66 were men.
The highest number of centenarians, 77, live in Prague and in South Moravia, where there are 53 people over 100 years old. The smallest number, only 5, live in the Karlovy Vary region. The Czech Social Security Administration has a special birthday present for all the 100-year-olds, a 2,000 crown rise in their monthly pension. And that can make a difference, as the average monthly pension in the Czech Republic is just over 8,000 crowns. Štěpánka Filipová again.
In October this year, the Czech Social Security Administration distributed old age pensions to 1,994,000 people. That is almost 75% of all people entitled to some kind of pension in the Czech Republic.
Demographer Jitka Richtaříková says that population projections suggest the number of old-age pensioners is only expected to rise.
Currently in the Czech Republic we have about 14% of people aged 65 and more, but this number will be increasing and we will have in 2050 about 30%.
The number of Czechs entitled to an old-age pension increased by 32,000 in the first half of 2006 alone. The government has announced that it needs to find some 10 billion crowns, which is lacking in the state budget for the December and January pensions, a similar situation as in the two previous years. A long put-off reform of the Czech Republic's pension system is one of the key issues that the government now has to tackle. Labour and Social Affairs Minister Petr Nečas is due to present the outline of his reform on Thursday.
And thank you, Pavla Horáková, for that report. You're listening to Radio Prague, where now it's time for a little culture. In Morbid Colours, Art and the Idea of Decadence in the Czech Lands, 1880 to 1914, is the title of a major new exhibition, which has just opened at Prague's Obecný dům, or Municipal House. The show is divided into four different sections with dramatic titles, like Satanic Hallucinations and Purgatory of Death. But what exactly is decadent art? That's a question I put to the exhibition's curator, Otto M. Urban.
In my view, decadent art is art which deals with topics or issues which are like hidden in the depth of human soul, artworks which deals with like a dark side of the human mind. But not only that, it also reflects the social, spiritual, religious situation of the society. It's like a mirror which is built to show the real face of the society. So that's why very often those decadent artworks were refused by society. The society didn't accept them. Of course, 100 years ago, we were discussed issues about censorship and things like that. But I think that decadence or decadent art is art which is present in European culture since Francisco Goya and his caprichos and his cycles which depicted that horror of life. Of course, then you can create the whole line of the artists who are directly connected with decadence. For Czech context was very important Belgic artist Felicien Robes or English draftsman Aubrey Beardsley, who was close friend with Oscar Wilde.
Who are some of the main Czech artists here in your exhibition?
At first, I would say that it's better to say artists from Czech lands, because this show is based on the fact that at that time, I mean, the turn of 19th and 20th century, in Czech lands was very important, like the group of German artists. Of course, in literature, it's well known, like Rilke, Kafka, Brod, and others. But there was a similar generation among painters and visual artists as well. So it was our intention to present that whole art scene in Prague or in Czech lands at that time, including those German artists. So besides, like, a well-known artist as František Kupka, who was, like, a next pioneer of abstraction, there is, of course, Josef Váchal, another very important artist, Karel Hlaváček, but also Max Švabinský or Jan Preissler, whose work is not, like, so clearly connected with the decadence from, like, the general view.
Finally, have there been any similar exhibitions elsewhere in other European capitals or cities?
As far as I know, not. Because that term decadence is not so often used in visual arts. So this is the first exhibition, not only in Czech lands, but as far as I know, globally, which has the term decadence in its title and which tries to use the decadence as a specified or defined term in the art history.
Otto M. Urban, the curator of In Morbid Colors, Art and the Idea of Decadence in the Czech Lands, 1880 to 1914. We'll hear more from him in next week's edition of The Arts. There isn't an Arts this week because this Friday is a state holiday and we have prepared a special program for you. On the 17th anniversary of the start of the Velvet Revolution, we'll be speaking to one of the student leaders of that time about his memories of 1989. And we'll also be posing the question, have Czechs come to terms with the communist past? I hope you can join us for that program on Friday. But getting back to the present, it's now time for Spotlight, in which Emily Udell visits Prague's Old Town Square and asks what can be done with the site of the part of the Old Town Hall destroyed during the war.
Undeterred by the onset of winter weather, hordes of tourists swirl in eddies around the Old Town Square, in front of the famous astronomical clock, by the carts selling sausages and cups of hot wine, down the passages lined with stalls crammed top to bottom with knickknacks and gewgaws. It is a site that is as rich in art and history as it is bustling with activity. This place is one of Prague's nerve centers, the beating heart of the old city.
This is the middle of Prague, of course. It was the oldest settlement around here, partly Czech or Slavonic, partly German on this side, partly French on this side. And it was such a place for merchandise. It was big trade here, trade with all the good of the early medieval slave trade and trade with the other items.
That was architect and urban planner Martin Kriza of the Club for Ancient Prague. He says the square has been a meeting place and a center for commerce throughout its long history. Its economic vibrancy made it the choice location for the town hall, which was founded in 1338 and served as the seat of Old Town's administration. In 1364, the tower housing the astronomical clock was joined to the chapel behind. The whole Old Town complex was revamped in a Gothic style during the next century. But the buildings behind the clock tower were almost entirely destroyed by tanks during the Nazis' retreat in May of 1945. Now, in place of the raised structures, the patch of land on the eastern part of the site is home to a few rows of small maple trees, leaves now burning bright gold, and rows of benches facing the square. On two sides of the site's perimeter are wooden stalls where tourists browse Prague souvenirs. Old Town Square itself has remained a commercial hub. Visitors aim cameras at the stately buildings, peruse the shops selling Bohemian crystal and marionettes, and stop to dine under the awnings of the square's restaurants. Horse-drawn carriages circle round the statue of Jan Hus and line up alongside the patch of land where the town hall stood before its 1945 destruction. Just before elections last month, city officials announced that a committee would be drawing up guidelines for a new competition to design a building or monument on the plot. Martin Kriza has entered three contests to fill the space, the first as a student in the early 60s.
What is important is to know what to build here. And I am afraid that it was said, the idea to build the new city council was set about 3 weeks before elections. So it was such a, let's say, propaganda idea. And I'm afraid that the city council doesn't know what to build here.
Both National Gallery Director Milan Knizak and Mr. Kriza say that determining the function of the building presents one of the most difficult challenges. An area chock full of stores and restaurants hardly needs a new shopping complex. And what to put on a site that is so integral to the city's identity? Milan Knizak.
The problem is that nobody knows what is supposed to be there. And the place is so precious, so symbolic and magic for Czech people, and not only for Czech people, for Jewish, for everybody. It's the heart of Prague with the famous clock and with, you know, all the historical events which were, you know, done here. And therefore, it's very difficult to fill that place.
A long stream of fruitless competitions took place during the last century. Mr. Knizak says that consensus could not be reached around one idea during the last competition, which was in the late 1980s.
Not even one project was good enough to find, the general support. On the other hand, because it was all conservative, it was also boring. And the Czech society, on one hand, sees the boring, proposals for the town hall at one hand. At the other hand, the society or the people who represent the society were not strong and brave enough to accept something which is kind of strange, new.
To demonstrate the tensions inherent in building on such a piece of prime and precious real estate, Mr. Knizak recalls a 1910 proposal by architect Josef Gochar that included plans for a ziggurat-style shopping tower.
And it was really fantastic, but they didn't do it in that time because it was too far out, and they said it's foreign architecture, it's not Czech enough, and blah, 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 blah. And a similar situation is now. The average proposals are boring, and the exceptional are not respected.
Blacksmith Jiří Hovorka forges a replica of a medieval knife at a stand on the site of the former town hall. He says construction would likely disrupt his business, but that's not the main reason he prefers its current state.
I think it should stay like this because it's very pretty and it makes it like wide open and more free instead of the building. And I think in 1992 or 3, I don't know, they were thinking about make some kind of like three-dimensional project here. And it was standing here a few days. I don't know exactly which year it was, but it doesn't look so nice. It was before this park was here. And my opinion is just leave it like that. If they do it, it should be nicer, like in an old shape, like Middle Age. It should be correspondable with the old stuff here. It shouldn't be like something extremely different or new, like dancing house by the river over there.
The Dancing House, a dual effort between Croatian architect Vlado Milunic and Canadian-American Frank Geary, stirred up some debate when it was built in the mid-90s. But some Praguers are open to the idea of mixing new architecture with old. After all, Old Town Square is a panoply of styles already. Gothic, Renaissance, and Baroque buildings stand side by side. Martin Tomschu looks to the example of another European city that has blended modern construction with traditional buildings.
I visited Paris and 10 years ago, and the best place from Paris for me, it's La Défense. This is modern architecture in Paris, and I hope in Prague in future something building like Paris.
Even Martin Kriza of the Club for Ancient Prague is open to a more modern construction, but he thinks it will take a miracle to find just the right plan and just the right person to execute it.
I don't think that will be a decision because it should be a miracle, you know. And it's really the spot for miracle. It's not for some normal... It must happen. And the coincidence of some genius, some jury, which will find it.
Both Kriza and Knizak forecast an inconclusive outcome for any upcoming competition. If they're right, the space behind the astronomical clock will remain what it is for now, a spot under the maple trees to rest from sightseeing, enjoy a Trek treat, and watch the crowds of people in the busy heart of Prague.
And that edition of Spotlight by Emily Udell brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. From myself, Ian Willoughby, and all the team, thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye and take care.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures, 7h27, 5930, 7345, Europe. 8h30, 8h57, 9860, 11600, Europe. Dix-sept heures trente, 17h57, 5930, 15710, Europe, Afrique centrale. 19h30, 19h57, 5930, 9430, Europe, Afrique. 23h, 23h27, 5930, 7345, Amérique du Nord. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.